Hi, everybody. Welcome to Obscure Animation. And this is the show where once a month we like to talk about indie, obscure, interesting, different animated films. And I'm film critic Rachel Wagner, and Stanford's here.
Rachel, hi. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Always a trip. You always have to have a trip if you're yes. me, planned at least. Something to look forward to.
It's good because we have an international director, at least, making this film that we're going to yes. talk about today. Ari Folman. Yes. So we're diving into one of his more unusual films, and it just seemed too perfect with all the things that are going on right now with yeah. the writer's strike and with AI just being at the top of everyone's mind. I really wanted to revisit this film. It's called The Congress that he, and I have a review of it actually on my channel. When it first came out in the States, nice. It was right when I first had started. I was pretty tough on it back then, but I was just curious because of the topic and everything, how I would feel about it now in 2020, and basically a decade later, how I would feel about it. And so it was interesting to revisit it. And is this one you had seen?
I've seen it, and I honestly forgot a lot about it other than, wow, that was kind of a weird film or unusual film. Yeah. So I was happy to revisit it with some fresh eyes because I probably didn't see it. I probably saw it like in 2014, you know, is what I'm thinking, 2013, 2014. I don't know if it reached mm-hmm. the States in 2013.
I mean, yeah, I think it was 2014. The release date.
Yeah. But, anyway.
Yeah. Let me see when I've had the review.
Oh yeah. That'll be the
yeah, my review of The Congress. Let's see here. This was 7 years ago. That's how long I've been doing YouTube.
Go rage.
I actually reviewed it July 2015.
Okay.
So maybe it took, let me look on the if it says on the Wikipedia.
Yeah, does it say somewhere on the
says it let's see, the acquisition, the rights to the film, US theatrical VOD digital release planned for 2014, but nevertheless I saw it in 2015, so okay. I guess that's when I reviewed it on the channel.
Were you familiar with the source material at all? I know I wasn't.
Is it like a graphic novel or something?
Well, it's this it's written by a Polish author, if I'm not mistaken. It's called The Futurological Congress, if I'm saying mm-hmm. it right.
Mm-hmm.
A black humor science fiction novel by Polish author Stanislaw Lem. Anyway, I wasn't familiar with it, but you know, I noticed in the credits, and then also, you know, doing the homework for the mm-hmm. podcast that it's based on a book. So yeah,
and I do think I raised my score from a 2.5 to a 4, which maybe is a little strong, but I do think I looked at it as a stronger film now than mm-hmm. I did in 2015. But I do think it is one of those films that I think, one of those indie films that I do think would be better as a short, as a featurette. I think stretched out to this length, you start to feel the runtime. And so many films at Sundance, I feel this way. Mm-hmm. It's 123 minutes. That's pretty long for an animated
long.
Film.
Yeah,
so I think it would be like a 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. It could still be feature length, but, or even like, I guess, you know, 65 minutes. Like I think it would be stronger with a little more lean storytelling.
Yeah, it really does go on. There's that whole big live action sequence at the first, which actually I didn't find boring, but they take their time, don't they? I mean, it's not really compact storytelling by any means.
It definitely feels more relevant now than it did in 2015.
Well, because we're living it, you know, yeah. I think in so many ways. Yeah.
I mean, because basically Robin Wright's character, she has this son who is troubled that she wants to try to help.
And he's ill, right? Yeah, he's got this condition where he's losing his hearing. Isn't he losing his eyesight too?
Yes, he's going blind. Yeah, that's right. And so she's in this kind of desperate space, and Cody Smith McPhee, he plays her son, and he's always great. He's, I think, underrated as an actor. I guess now he's gotten an Oscar nomination, so that's good. But if you want to see an underrated, under the radar, really good film, there's a movie called Alpha. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, but he plays like prehistoric man, and he's basically the only one. He's basically the only actor in the movie dog.
I was gonna say, was it with the dog?
Wolf/dog.
I did not see that, but I remember seeing the trailers.
It's actually like really good and compelling, well made. He's so good in it, and it's just one of those ones that kind of went under the radar that nobody saw, that didn't get marketed well. And I think it's a compelling hidden gem, I would say. But he's just a really, I think, really good actor.
I thought he was very good in this film. I thought everybody was good, actually.
Yeah.
In this
film. You got Harvey Keitel.
Yeah. Danny Houston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I admire Robin Wright for being up for this, for being so vulnerable.
I did too. I thought it was courageous. It's a courageous role.
Yeah.
I think.
Because they talk about the Princess Bride and Buttercup and Jenny from Forrest Gump. I mean, she's not playing obviously it's a version of herself, but it is, she's not playing like a different actress. She's playing herself, a version of herself.
Which I thought was, again, an interesting part of this whole story. And I, again, she does it well. And as you said, she's really putting herself out there, because the whole premise of this is, as we'll get into, but it's like she's either over the hill or, in these film producers' minds, as well as she's just made all these bad decisions, right? Like how they're gripping on all these, kind of fictional films, right, that she had made over the last 10 years, but praising her early stuff and how wonderful she was. Yeah. And Princess Bride. And then, as you mentioned, in Forrest Gump.
Yeah. And I think it's an interesting thing when you look at this AI technology, because it can be quite charming. It's not necessarily this sort of dark, horrible, kind of thing. Like I don't know if you saw that Star Wars through Wes Anderson thing
a couple of weeks ago.
It was really cute and funny. Yeah. And I didn't even realize that it was AI when I first shared it. I thought, oh, this is just somebody, doing some fan fiction, basically fan art. And then someone said it was AI generated. And I was like, oh, that was really cute.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of Rachel's Reviews? Do you look forward to Family Movie Night, Female Film Critics Panels, or the Talking Disney podcast? If so, please consider supporting the podcast by becoming a patron. As a patron, you get to access monthly events such as the watch-alongs and Q&As, where you get to talk to stars and find out the behind the scenes of the movie making industry. And you can pick what I review for Family Movie Night, or even become a guest on the podcast. Podcasts and YouTube channels are expensive, and I really, really could use your help. I would so appreciate it. You also get to be a member of the Facebook group, where we talk about all the films that we're seeing and we have so much fun. Go to patreon.com/hallmarkies and select one of the Rachel's fan tiers. That's patreon.com/hallmarkies.
Cute. And I've got friends that are real pros, with these tools. And one's an artist, one's a writer, and anyway, it's pretty impressive. I sometimes feel, and maybe everybody does, maybe a touch scared.
Yeah, I think so. That's like, if you played around with this Chat GPT at all?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the same with my friend that's a writer. He's like doing all his stuff in Chat GPT now.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, I first got introduced to it when I was trying to think of a title for a video that for Christmas, it was a Christmas video, and my friend Sean, our friend Sean Chandler, he told me about it, and we literally typed in like Rachel and I can't remember who it was, like Rachel and Caroline talk Christmas Hallmark Christmas movies or whatever, and like boom, it popped out title. I was like, wow. It was, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely a powerful tool.
It's a really amazing tool. Yeah.
And it's just a question of like, can we control it?
Well, exactly. You know, and how far should we let it? Mm-hmm. It was part of the control thing. How far should we let it go?
Because in the movie, so Danny Houston plays the head of this Miramount.
Yeah, this fictional film studio.
Yeah.
And Miramax and Paramount combined or something.
He's offering the last contract you will ever have. So they're going to scan her, preserve her on the computer. And I mean, if you look at this recent, this upcoming Indiana Jones, the de-aging looks, in my opinion, looks flawless. It looks, at least, so good. The trailer.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It looks so good. I mean, and we've seen this technology evolve with, you know, when I first saw it with Tarkin in Rogue One, I think it was.
Yeah.
And it's still looked like a video game character. It didn't look like a real character. And now we've come to the point where you can barely tell.
You barely tell. Yeah. Cause also, you know, Princess Leia didn't look very good. I didn't think of that in that film.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only thing really stopping it right now from AI generated, computer generated actors is that it's just still so expensive. If anybody's able to produce it on the cheap and it still look really great, that is scary.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
But he offers her this contract. It's the AI's proposal. And he says that we can save you and save you from yourself. You sign and agree to never act again. And she says, well, it's the actor who goes off to play golf for the rest of their life. And yeah. I think with that, it's interesting because there is an appeal to that, but it depends on how much, I guess, you love your craft and how much like are you doing it just as a job or are you doing it for something more? Plus, you would be sacrificing your own autonomy, and people like they were talking about the Holocaust movies and stuff. And
yeah,
you know, I don't see why you don't do a Holocaust flick. Every great actress does a Holocaust flick.
That's right. And she just refused.
Yeah. I mean, and of course that's extra ironic coming from Ari Folman, who's Israeli.
Yes.
Director. So, but yeah, you lose control. She talks about, being on the, vote for Bush clip with the AI and he says I don't want to be their puppet, and Danny Houston says you were always their puppet. So you know, I mean, it's an issue because people talked about it that like what if we had like a whole movie with like Marilyn Monroe or somebody like that, you know, that has passed on, Jimmy Stewart or Elvis or you know whoever it might be. And it's just when you look at that Harrison Ford in that, this movie, it's like, wow, that looks so good.
Indiana Jones trailer. He looks so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you bring up an interesting point in this film. Yeah. As you said, it was really almost telling the future in a way. I thought that was so interesting. You know, one of the things when they were showing that clip about with that couple, you know, with where the man voted for both, confessed to voting for both President Bush, you know, he or the actress, I noticed it too. You know, she like had that weird blink. And they're like, oh, that's just a glitch. You know, we're going to fix that the next time. Nobody will notice that. And anyway, very interesting. Just that is an interesting setup.
And that's when we find out Paul Giamatti plays the doctor. This is a great cast for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he plays the doctor. He says that Aaron's going blind. And so she's trying to help that, but she needs the money. And he says that one out of every 1,000 of movie watchers didn't read Lord of the Rings, which is kind of depressing.
I know. Those are real facts that he was using. Those are depressing.
Yeah. They say, sign the contract and I'll make you forever 33. And they've got like a great cinematographer as the scanner. So she decides to go in to the scanner. And they say the worst defect an actress can have is fear. And he says, the kids come along and you've got to get rid of your fears. You have to be strong. And so I think that's probably true with that. You have to have to be a good actor or actress. I think you'd have to have a certain fearlessness of, you know, diving into these, you know, like if you're going to be in the Hulk, I think there's these things that you've got to somehow kind of summon, whether, you know, you're going to, if you're these dark things that might happen to your story, like that if you're afraid, you wouldn't be able to give a performance.
Yep.
Yeah. And so then we jump ahead 20 years later. So it is a pretty long section. They could definitely cut some of this out.
Oh yeah. It goes on and on.
But it's interesting. And like I said, I think I was just more interested in it now than I was in 2015 because of everything that's happening.
You know, I never lost interest, but I do think, as we had already talked about, it really could have been timed up. You know, mm-hmm. it was a half hour too long. But still, every scene, you know, and just thinking back on it too, every scene was interesting. Like the scene we're just about to discuss. It went on, for quite a while, but it was still visually quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she goes to the futurist conference and she sniffs this vial and that turns her into a cartoon. And she sees the trailers for her AI movies, which is interesting.
Her Rebel Robot Robin movies.
And they say that she's the sixth Robin Wright of that day. At the futurist concert, and everything is in our mind. If you see the dark, then you've chosen the dark, and the actress has never left you. If you are here, you're a believer, and there's a free choice formula that you have to kind of agree to, and so she's trying to find her son. And that's where we meet John Hamm's character.
Yes.
So she's a friend. He's a friend, and helps her to find her son. And doesn't want her to fall asleep. Is trying to keep her kind of there and not fade off into this surrealist environment.
And we learn that he is the lead animator, right, for her, mm-hmm. for her film. So he, even though she just met him, he's been in love with this robot version of her, you know, for 2 decades.
He's head of the Robin Wright department.
Yeah,
which is really interesting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's a point where she's arrested and she's put under this firing squad. She's shot. She's hallucinating, she gets frozen. And so it's pretty trippy.
It is trippy. And kind of, I guess, confusing, right?
I mean,
I think that's the way it's supposed to be, but because she doesn't really know when and where she is, and neither do we as the viewer, but still, you know, time marches on. And I think it's just basically another 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. After she gets shot and frozen, but she doesn't die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the appeal of like staying forever young, which is an interesting idea because I don't know. I mean, I just, especially like my late 20s, those were such hard years. That was a tough time for me. And I feel like I was so much happier in my like late 30s than I was then.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that late 20s is a hard part time for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't necessarily choose, maybe if you're talking, my college years were a very happy time in my life. And so if you're talking that young, then maybe, I guess, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I certainly wouldn't want to pick high school, that's for sure.
Oh, heavens no.
Yeah, if you were, like, what era would you pick? It's like,
oh, probably my 30s. Yeah.
It's because like I feel like I've said this before, but I feel like your late 20s, you're still sort of paying those dues.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever career you have, you're
yeah,
or even just
figuring it out.
Yeah. Or if you have a family, it's when they're young. You're paying the dues there. It's a tough, yeah. It's tough.
Yeah.
There's also the theme though of Aaron has this kite. It's kind of like an airplane, boxy airplane kite. And that you see throughout, and sometimes it's really, really big and sometimes it's small, and it's sort of a theme kind of running through.
Yeah, I was wondering what the kite was symbolic of. You know, was it freedom or, you know, I don't know.
I didn't know if it was just symbolizing him, just
right.
Like her connection to him. Yeah, it was a little vague.
Yeah, it was vague.
Yeah.
And then, you know, yeah, maybe intentionally. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, this is just kind of diving into his art. You know, I haven't seen this Bo is Afraid, and I'm not going to, but it seems like it's kind of a similar experience of a sort of diving into a filmmaker's art.
Yes.
And at least this is, not only is it only, it's 2 hours total, but the art part, diving into the art, the surrealist is pretty, you know, small part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it's more palatable.
Yeah.
I don't know if we needed to have the animated sex. Let's say that. I don't think.
I kept waiting for that. In fact, I was surprised I was surprised there wasn't more, you know? So, I mean, I was grateful, but like, okay, here we go. Here's finally the, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, animated sex.
Yeah. I mean, and that is part of, in Waltz with Bashir, there's that, you know, in there's some nudity and things like that in that movie. Of course, that movie's more of like an outright war movie,
yeah,
quasi-documentary kind of a thing. And so.
Well, and the kite, if I'm not mistaken, Rach, the kite kind of plays a role in that too, because aren't they flying the kite that then crashes the airplanes and causes like all the airplanes to crash? And then they're having sex in front of all the fire. Right. And then, yeah.
Yeah.
So whatever that symbol, I'm sure that it was symbolic. I didn't know quite how to interpret it other than it was happening.
And it's a lot.
Yeah.
But it also, I guess, makes it a little unique. It's just, you don't see it very often.
Yeah.
And you have like, again, really surrealist parts like Michael Jackson being the waiter and.
Oh, yeah. And there were like all sorts of. Yeah. Particularly that first scene when Robin Wright, you know, when her animated self arrives at the Congress, there's mm-hmm. all sorts of stuff going on. There was like animated Elizabeth Taylor as Cleopatra and with like Greta Garbo. And I'm, you know, like a lot of these, well, kind of iconic celebrities, yeah. And Michael Jackson is the waiter. Whatever that was about. It was Thriller Michael Jackson. Anyway.
So he gives her, she can take a white pill, a whiteout pill. And if she takes the pill, then she goes back to the real world, to this dystopian, and he says, "I love you, Robin." And he doesn't want her to go, but she's really desperate to find Aaron. And so she takes the pill, whites out, ends up in the dystopian. It's like Children of Men.
Exactly. That's what it totally, yeah.
So this, it is kind of amazing how much he accomplished for, this is cost 8 million, I guess, Israeli pounds, whatever that is, Israeli dollars. He did a lot on that, when you consider the live action part, the dystopian part, the animated part, the cast that they got. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I thought so too. That, because that sequence when, you know, again, when Robin Wright comes back, she's aged. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said, you know, it's this dystopian society and everybody is filthy and hungry and society just looks like it's a huge disaster. And that was real, right? Those look like, you know, extras and that was.
We'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. It's the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Are you looking for that perfect gift for the postable, hardy, or Hallmarkie in your life?
What about getting that t-shirt or hoodie that will help you stand out at your next holiday party?
Now is the time to check out the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Full of festive designs by artists like Jessica Miller, Carrie from Hallmark Comics, and more.
You can even have more than just shirts, but totes, cell phone cases, notebooks, mugs, and more.
And it isn't just Hallmark. We have designs for Anna Green Gables, Man from Snowy River, The Nanny, and more.
Every purchase at the merch store goes to help support the podcast and allows us to make the great content you know and love.
There are frequent sales, so go to tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies or see the link in the description.
That's tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies.
Is that Aaron waited for you all these years, and now he's crossed over to an animated world 6 months ago. And which is just so sad, because now if she goes into the animated world, she doesn't know what he is disguised as. He doesn't know. She doesn't know where to even look for him. And so, but she does end up choosing to go back. She takes the spray and then she goes to the animated past and she finds Aaron, but it's not really clear if that's the same Aaron.
Right.
She had left. Yeah. They say that your past is gone. You can't go back. But at least this is some semblance of reality.
That they, you know, exactly. Yeah.
So if you were to take a stab at it, what do you think that Ari is trying to kind of say in this film?
I've been thinking about it. No, it's a very good question. You know, clearly I feel like it's major social commentary. I think he's ripping on the ridiculousness of Hollywood and only glorifying, you know, actors and actresses when they're young.
Mm-hmm.
And also just the ridiculousness of kind of their, the moral void, I think, how that many operate in. I feel like Danny Houston was just like the perfect representation.
Yeah.
And, you know, his character and the way that whole thing was created. And then also just the whole concept, mm-hmm. that Robin Wright's going to give away her everything about her. And they'll continue to make movies with her, but it's not going to, you know, be her, but she'll be forever young.
I think it is a warning of all this AI and ChatGPT, and that it is kind of sparkly and exciting and even compelling, but we do have to be really careful because you can lose your humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I was just reading that. So he was born in Israel, and his parents were Holocaust survivors. And if you think about like the dehumanizing of the Holocaust and what people did to, you know, to other humans. It's just,
yeah,
it kind of, it makes sense that he would be really concerned about the dehumanizing of, mm-hmm. of this, of technology,
yeah.
and AI and just the way we, like Robin Wright's character in the movie, she basically sells her soul.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah. And we have to be really careful about what can dehumanize. And, you know, in philosophy, they talk a lot about the response of the other. And, yeah. And when we meet another human being, we immediately have a response to the humanity of that other person, right? The other, and what humanity has done time and time again is they turn the other into the same. So instead of that person that we've had this response to, we turn them into a category. So they're a slave, or they're a gay person, or they're whatever it is, you're going to label them. So that label allows you, in the past, you know, a lot of people, it allows you to discriminate them in some way. You don't, it allows you to ignore their humanity.
It's, yeah.
Because of some, you've now taken away that innate other, mm-hmm. other response. And, you know, in religion, we see that as well. You know, the idea that everybody's a child of God, that everybody has innate value. And it's just something that you need to be really careful, because I mean, look at what ended up happening in the Holocaust and so many other, you know, horrible tragedies. That genocide and stuff like that, that people have allowed themselves to somehow they end up doing.
Yeah. Well, the world, I feel like, you know, when Robin Wright enters into that animated world, it's a pretty horrible place, I think, in that it's just for all the reasons that you're describing, you know, there really is no humanity. People are taking on these identities, you know, like the six other people that had taken on the identity of Robin Wright that had checked into the hotel, you know, you know, basically she's become like a product rather than a human. And mm-hmm. so everything's, I feel like, dehumanized. And,
it's kind of extra icky when you think about then people are entertained by that,
exactly.
It's scary.
It's icky. And you know, those crowd sequences, like when Robin Wright is speaking, everybody just seems, you know, just like kind of this ocean of people, and they're all just kind of like sheep, you know, and then they're all just following along without any real kind of conscious morality. You know, I mean, or just kind of any kind of North Star. The North Star is they just want to be, you know, Robin Wright or whatever, fair, you know, robot. Robin
Wright. Well, it's like it's scary in the sense of they've turned into zombies, but it's just like happy.
Yeah.
Happy zombies.
Yeah. And it's not like they're, you know, killing people or whatever, or being violent or whatnot, but it's, you know, they're not sentient.
Have you read Wrinkle in Time?
Yes.
And when you think about it and the people and it on that planet and how they've lost their humanity, and Meg starts to starts to change Charles Wallace, and Meg starts to see that.
It's one of the more interesting dystopia themed films that I've seen in a while.
Yeah, it's normally not my favorite genre. I am famously not a Hunger Games fan.
I don't care for the genre either, but I thought this was, you know, quite a thought-provoking.
Yeah, I do. I love Wrinkle in Time as a book, and I love The Gift, The Giver, with Willis Lowry. I didn't, the movie wasn't that great, but The Giver, it's all about they allow this dystopian where everybody's kind of controlled, and they allow one person that has the memories and knows the truth is the giver. And one person gets picked to be the next giver. But as he starts to learn, he gets more and more sort of horrified about what is happening. And I knew that it would not make a good movie because so much of it is them like sitting and going over memories.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it works for a book, but for
but not like a great, the movies aren't a great medium for that type of story.
Yeah. It's just so much just talking and mm-hmm. like a therapist session.
Yeah.
But it's great.
I thought one of the things that was so interesting about this, though, at least in a way, even though it was weird, that Robin Wright, her character, in a way, has a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's unable to reconnect with her daughter, although she can view it. She can view where the daughter lives from afar. She, you know, when she's with Dylan, and Dylan's just like,
you mean a son?
Well, they have two kids, or she had two kids, right? Doesn't she have a daughter? And then she meets up with the son, the kite flying son.
Oh yeah.
But she can't connect with the daughter. It's a woman, isn't she? Doesn't she have a girl? You know, the one with the short hair.
Yeah. Oh anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And, there's so much going on in this one.
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. But she does get kind of a happy ending with her son, but it's just like, you don't know if it's like a real, like it's happy for her. She's satiated, but
yeah,
really like it's not her son. So it's kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah. Cause the world, you know, was the world ultimately just created by her consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or anyway.
Yeah.
Questions.
Mm-hmm.
I left with more questions than answers, but I was at least happy that kind of that final shot that she's able to reconnect with her son in the middle of the desert and what appeared to be kind of where they were living in the first of the movie.
Yeah, they were like in an airplane hangar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely thought it was worth checking out. And if people are kind of interested in these themes and these ideas, then I think it's one that is worth a watch. It's still not perfect, but I think, Sarah Wright. That was her daughter. Sarah Wright.
Okay.
Yeah, I forgot about
Thank
that.
Thank you. I was hoping I wasn't going to be completely, you know, crazy. Thank you.
Yeah, no. So I thought that this was refreshing and interesting and has, you can have something to talk about. And I think it's very relevant and you can watch it all over the place. It's on Pluto. It's on Tubi. It's on.
I watched on Hulu.
So yeah. It's very accessible. So anybody can watch it. And I think it's an interesting film and worth checking out, I think.
Absolutely. And, you know, great performances from everybody. I think especially Robin Wright. She's very good.
Very vulnerable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Both as an animated character and then, you know, playing a live action version of herself.
Yeah. Well, let us know what you think. We've got this, you know, writer strike right now. People are saying they're going to use AI instead of writers. So this is just very, very of the moment. So that's why I thought it would be fun to talk about. And so absolutely. Let us know what you think of the movie choice. And all these issues. We'd love to hear in the comments. And so thanks so much for talking about this with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Rachel. Always a pleasure. You always are introducing me to such cool movies. And it was fun to rewatch this with, you know, again, as I said, with fresh eyes and with this whole new stuff that's going on or you know, a lot more of it.
So where can people find you on social media, all that fun stuff?
On Twitter, I'm at Stanford Clark, and I have a movie podcast and blog at moviespastandpresent.com. Yeah.
And you are not an AI.
That we know, right? Yeah.
Yes. You can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. You can also find me at the Hallmarkies podcast. We've got lots of fun stuff going on over there.
And if you are listening on iTunes, please leave your ratings and reviews. That helps us a lot. And if you are listening on YouTube, please give the video a thumbs up, subscribe to the channel. We appreciate that so much. We also have the Patreon group, which is really fun. And it's a chance to be part of Patreon watch alongs, where you get to watch a movie with a star and hear all about how it's made. This month we have Rodrigo Massa, who's like a pretty big name for just like my dinky little patron. So that's super cool. Yeah. And he's going to be talking about Merry Xmas, which was a movie I loved last year. So that'll be fun. So check out the Patreon. Also, every Sunday, I do the AFI Passions Reviews, which is this list they did of 100 films that they felt like were passionate. And so I'm about halfway through. And so every Sunday, you
you're making progress on this list.
Exclusive reviews for the patrons. And it really helps a lot. And I would really appreciate it checking that out. And then we have the merch store, hashtag Animation Junkie Shirts. So take a look at that. And thanks so much to you. And let us know if you have any ideas of obscure animation, smaller indie films that we could talk about. We would love to hear your suggestions. And I will talk to y'all later.